Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Coast, Derek Gilbert, our special guest. Derek, of course, was with me about 2 years ago. Derek hosts Skywatch Television, a Christian television program that airs on several national networks, long-running interview podcast A View from the Bunker, and co-hosts Sci Friday, a weekly television program that analyzes science news with his wife, author and analyst Sharon Gilbert. His professional radio career spanned 2 decades, including stops in Philadelphia, St. Louis, and Little Rock. Derek launched PID Radio and Sharon in the early 2005 era, making it one of the first podcasts on the internet. You were paving some ground there, Derek. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that. I think it's amusing. Last time I was on your program was with Josh Peck. We co-authored a book about the UFO phenomenon. As Josh likes to remind me that my radio career began the year that he was born. So
that's right. And you did a stint in St. Louis. Where were you?
I was, in fact, as we talk, I am on the station I used to work for there. It was at 97.1, but back in the day, that was Top 40.
That's right. Absolutely. It's a great station. Great people there, too, Derek.
Yeah, but used to listen to you when you were on the Big 550. Over.
That's right, as the Nighthawk.
Right, that's right.
Absolutely. Doing my stuff. Super. And you really started branching into a lot of these different areas. Tell me about the evolution of you and your career and your wife, Sharon.
Always been interested in the way things work. I guess I inherited that from my father, who is an engineer by birth, by training. I didn't go that direction, but inherited his desire to figure out the way things work. Sharon and I married in 1998 and began looking into some of the, say, the political conspiracies, but we began to realize that there's more going on than meets the eye. And I think you would agree with that.
Reality,
what we perceive as reality, is just a small subset of what's actually real out there. And so in digging into that, just led into the research that's now produced, well, a number of books. What's funny is that you mentioned my podcast, and thank you for that. In the course of interviewing people who you've had as guests on your program, like Steve Quayle.
Said Steve's on tomorrow night, as a matter of fact.
Okay. And L.A. Marzulli, I began to get a reputation as somebody who was obsessed with the Nephilim, the giants mentioned in the Bible. And it wasn't really the case, but the funny thing is now, over the last couple of years, it actually turned out to be the main area of research that I've been doing, because the more we find out from archaeologists and historians, the more we realize that these entities, these beings, were not only known to the cultures around ancient Israel, but they actually play a central role in the Bible, And that's just not been communicated to the Christian church.
Why not?
I think around the time of Augustine, who was very influential in the direction of Christian theology back in the 5th century A.D., he was coming out of a cult called the Manichaeans, and they venerated angels. And so I think as a reaction to his own personal experience, and maybe a desire to counter some of the criticism that Christians were taking for believing in the existence of literal giants who were the product of angels who came to Earth and mated with human women, he tried to find a natural explanation for that very weird section of Genesis chapter 6. The first five verses there talk about the angels, the sons of God, who saw that the daughters of man were fair and took wives of all they chose, and from them came the Nephilim, the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. And that's where we got the sons of Seth theory, the idea that righteous men who were sons of Seth, the son of Adam and Eve, married the daughters of Cain. And that's been the default understanding among Christians now for the last 1,500 years or so. That's pretty much the default teaching in most seminaries today. But in order to arrive at that teaching, that understanding of Genesis 6, you have to throw out Hebrew grammar and what the apostles and prophets knew about the beliefs of their neighbors.
You have studied this for a number of years. What got you interested in this facet, Derek?
Just the idea that there's something so weird in the Bible that was believed not just by the Jews of the period before the birth of Jesus, but the early church. The early church fathers up through the 5th century accepted this as the truth. It's referenced in some of the letters of the epistles, the apostles, that is, Peter and Jude in particular mention this. But then when I started looking into what the cultures around ancient Israel believed, you know, what did the Canaanites believe? What did the people of Mesopotamia believe? What did the ancient Hittites believe? You begin to find out, it's like, wait a minute, Moses didn't just make up this stuff to fill space in the books of, you know, Deuteronomy and Leviticus and Numbers and so on. The cultures around ancient Israel knew who the Nephilim were. They called them by different names, called them Anakim. They're mentioned in Egyptian texts. Rephaim, and there's good scholarly evidence now that's only come to light within the last 50 years, that not only did the Canaanites know who the Rephaim were, just a different name for the spirits of the giants of old, they venerated them, which is the title of the most recent book that Sharon and I authored, Veneration. But that belief was then transmitted to the Greeks and Romans as hero worship. So we can draw a straight line from the Nephilim of Genesis 6 through, say, Hercules, and not to step on any toes here, but even beyond that, then to the veneration of the saints in Roman Catholic and Orthodox churches today.
Now, the latest book, of course, Veneration, the subtitle is very intriguing, Unveiling the Ancient Realms of Demonic Kings and Satan's Battle Plan for Armageddon. How close are we, in your opinion, Derek, to this Armageddon?
Well, I think we're a lot closer now than we were 2,000 years ago. Don't like to set dates or anything, but certainly the conditions appear to be in place for that to take place. I don't believe that Christians will be on the earth when this happens, but in the book we don't get into any kind of timeline setting as far as a rapture or anything like that. Armageddon will be the final battle of the ages, and we equate it in the book with the prophecy of the war of Gog and Magog that Ezekiel lays out in chapters 37 and 38 of his book. But we also go a step farther. Rather than looking for, say, a human opponent in the war of Gog and Magog, it's kind of become the default belief among a lot of Christians who study prophecy to look at Russia as Gog or the land of Magog, and then try to identify a leader. You know, Vladimir Putin must be Gog of Magog.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the Jewish rabbis think that it's, Bashar al-Assad of Syria. We point out in the book that when you understand what the Hebrew prophets knew about the spirit realm, they point to call it a cosmic north. There's a mountain that is on the border between Turkey and Syria that was known in the ancient world, the days of the prophets, as the place where Baal, who was the king of the Canaanite pantheon, where his palace was located. There's a Hebrew phrase used only three places in the Bible, including Ezekiel's prophecy of the War of Gog and Magog, that points to that mountain. Isaiah also uses it in the very famous passage in Isaiah chapter 14, "How thou art fallen, O Lucifer, son of the morning." That's the place where he wants to establish his throne. But it was understood by the prophets and the early church that that was where Baal came from, and Jesus in the New Testament significantly identifies Baal as Satan. The point is not that the Antichrist or Gog of Magog is coming from Turkey or Syria or some combination of the two. It's that it's a supernatural enemy who leads this demonic army into battle at Armageddon, and it's coming from cosmic north. It's coming from the headquarters of Satan.
Now, in your opinion, what is demon? What is a demon? And how did the origin of demons begin?
This is the understanding of the Jews up until the time of Jesus' birth and into the second century. This is the understanding of the early church. Demons are the spirits of those giants created in Genesis chapter 6 before the flood. When the flood swept over the earth and destroyed all living flesh on the earth, the spirits of those giants were prevented from the normal entry into the afterlife, condemned to wander the earth, plaguing or tormenting humans until the judgment. So, very simply, demons are the spirits of the giants of old.
These demons, what created them?
It's apparently because their spirits were, well, miscegenated. They were hybrids. They're neither fully angelic, neither fully spirit, nor fully human. And so they don't belong really to either realm. This is expanded on in the Book of Enoch, which is not in the Bible except for the Ethiopic Bible. But the Book of Enoch was known to the early church. Again, the apostles Peter and Jude mention it in their letters. So it's, even though there are reasons for it not to be in the Bible itself, it does expand on that little incident in Genesis chapter 6, that significant incident in Genesis chapter 6. It goes into some detail as to who these angels were who decided to rebel, where they rebelled. According to the Book of Enoch, they descended to Mount Hermon, which is about a 9,000-foot mountain on the border between Israel, Syria, and Lebanon, and they made a mutual pact to agree to go through with this rebellion against God by commingling with humanity and creating this hybrid race of giants. And again, according to the Book of Enoch, God said that because their spirits were neither angelic, neither spirit nor human, but both, a hybrid that was never supposed to be, their spirits would be condemned to remain on earth and be the cause of all kinds of trouble for humanity until the final judgment.
Why was it bad to deal with, you know, the dead, trying to contact the dead, trying to do these things? It brought disaster to the Israelites. How come?
This was something that Moses was instructed by God. You know, don't consult with necromancers, people who claim they can speak with the dead. Don't summon them through rituals. Don't consult with mediums. These were things that were being done by the pagan neighbors of ancient Israel, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Edomites, the Canaanites in particular. The reason is that the spirits of the dead aren't really the spirits of the dead. We only see one example in the Bible of a human spirit who returns. And this is when King Saul goes to the medium at Endor, trying to get a message to, trying to call the prophet Samuel up from the dead. Samuel had died. God wasn't responding to any of Saul's prayers. So he goes to a medium, and Samuel comes up. Now, interestingly, in the biblical account, the medium, when the spirit of Samuel rises from the earth, she cries out with a loud voice. I believe that's because she was startled. It wasn't her demonic spirit guide. It wasn't her familiar. It was actually Samuel. But that's the only example we see in the Bible of a human spirit still hanging around on earth and interacting with the humans. However, those demonic spirits, those spirits of the old giants, the Nephilim, were still around and interacting with humans. And an entire culture, the Canaanite, the Amorite cultures, were based on having to appease the spirits of the ancestors. Every 30 days, they had to summon the ancestors by name in a necromancy ritual and feed the ancestors. This was always done on the 30th of the month, according to ancient texts, the night of no moon, because even 4,000 years ago they understood the moonless night was a night when the veil between the worlds was thinnest. But they weren't the spirits of the ancestors. They were the spirits of these demons. And I believe that's why God made it very clear to Moses, tell Israel, you're not doing this.
Were these demons also what we would call Satanist devils, things like that?
Well, they're certainly the minions of Satan. Isaiah chapter 14 makes it clear that when the rebel from Eden, Satan, is cast down from heaven, the English translation of the Bible will say, the shades rise up to greet thee. But the word translated shades is Rephaim. And there are a number of places in the Bible where that word Rephaim, which was the name applied to these spirits by the pagan neighbors of ancient Israel. Again, Moses didn't invent this term, where it's translated as the dead or shades. So we kind of lose the context that these Rephaim were the divinized dead kings of old, the mighty men who were of old, as they're described in Genesis chapter 6. And getting back to the disaster that came on Israel, the book of Numbers describes a plague that afflicted Israel while they were camping on the east side of the Jordan River just before they crossed over to attack the city of Jericho. 24,000 Israelites died in this plague, and it was stopped because the grandson of Moses' brother Aaron, Phinehas, took a spear and, stabbed a prince of Israel and a princess of the country of Midian who were engaged in some fertility rite, it appears. But when you read deeper into the Bible, you see that what actually provoked God's anger, and this is in Psalm 106, was that they were eating sacrifices offered to the dead, which again was the common practice among the neighboring pagan Canaanites.
Are we doing that today?
Many cultures around the world still engage in this today, George. All over the world, there are practices in Africa, in Asia, veneration of the ancestors is a common thing. Shrines are set up in homes in many cultures around the world where offerings are put forth for the ancestors to consume, again, based on the belief that ancestors can still intercede for us. They can cross over from the spirit realm and affect us in the land of the living. Christian teaching has never been that this is possible. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, this has kind of crept into some denominations of Christianity as prayers to the saints. And this was actually going back to St. Augustine, the result of his attempt to try to Christianize a practice that the early church could not stamp out.
How dangerous is it to try to dabble with the dead, Derek?
Well, it's the danger that I think most people agree you can bring on yourself by messing around with the Ouija board.
Oh, yeah. I'm opposed to those things.
Exactly, because it's not really the dead that we're dealing with. We're dealing with these evil spirits, these hybrid spirits that are neither angel nor human, but are masquerading as the spirits of the dead. They lie, and they will encourage us to engage in practices that interact with them for the deception. They want to lure us away from what's true into following their path, which ultimately leads to destruction.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.